Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups, Amazing Race Canada Edition. Today, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 3, and a whole bunch of Express Pass-related drama. So, Dan Heaton, what are we calling this? Express Pass-ageddon? Express Pass-a-palooza? Express Pass-a-rama? What's your pleasure?
I think I like Express Pass-ageddon because it did lead to someone's destruction and nearly to the loss of the giver count. So I think Express Pass again, because it was destructive. You know, there were teams that were on the edge, except for Andrea and Ebony, who are very thankful that that happened, I think. Well, sort of. I still feel like the real beneficiaries were Team Giver, because has a team ever been so bad at several tasks in multiple weeks, yet still somehow seeming like they might have a shot to do well?
Oh, I feel like that's the Cinderella story of every season in The Amazing Race, and certainly of Amazing Race Canada. And we've had that team win it all, maybe even more than once.
Yeah, and it's funny because they won the first episode. And I even had a comment on Twitter where someone mentioned that they thought that Team Giver was the most complete team the Amazing Race Canada's ever had. And I'm not going to mention it just because I don't want to be mean to anyone, but I'm sorry to say I have to disagree. I know they won the first leg and they are good at certain things, but let's look at this week. They struggled with the tent task. They needed help. Then they did okay, but the detour was kind of a disaster. And I feel like, let's say there's no express passes. Let's say straight up, all the teams are just competing. They're out. They're going to be the ones who lose, I think.
I mean, I think you might be right about that. It's hard to tell, though. And, you know, we could write a lot of fan fiction about this. It is true. They are sort of bumbling. And I think the most obvious comparison that you can draw, like, I think we've had a team of a couple of really goofy hosers in the past in the form of Mickey and Pete. And I think that's the obvious comparison that everybody's drawing. And, you know, Mickey and Pete were kind of the same thing. They were pretty good in certain aspects, but then they just sort of hung on for a really long time. And all of a sudden they came out of nowhere and won the whole thing.
That is true. And when you have a team that's physically pretty good and that could be really good, if they hang out and they survive episodes, because like we've talked about, every team that wins, we didn't see it as much last season, but teams that win generally have episodes where they struggle. And I'm not saying if you said, Dan, bet who's going to win, I'm not picking Team Giver, even though they're on my team. But they probably could survive in that case. But the interesting thing about this whole leg, and not to bury the lead, but with Express Pass again, is that we, Jess, have no Express Passes left in the game. How is this possible?
It's pretty amazing, Dan. I especially, you know, that in introducing that many Express Passes, you know, they wanted it to play out for much longer than it actually did. But it was like easy come, easy go, I guess.
Yeah, it was a real surprise. But the good thing about this is I was a big fan of this episode. And the great thing I like is it wasn't just because of the Express Pass. This wasn't a case, for me at least, where if there had not been the Express Passes, this would have been a ho-hum episode. I feel like there's a lot of reasons why this was, well, it's not much to say this was the best of the season so far for me. But it also, for me, made a lot of teams seem more endearing than I expected, and I'm really excited for the rest of the season after this episode. What did you think?
Well, you know, I may not be quite as high on this episode as you were, but I think that's just down to my desire for a really well-designed course. And honestly, I feel like every task we got tonight was something we've seen before a lot. Like the task of pick something up and deliver it to several addresses, that's a staple of The Amazing Race. And unfortunately, I think as you quite rightly note, there were some great character moments and all of the teams really stepped up their personalities to make up for what might have been a pretty meh leg for me. And I think that elevates it. That makes it really eminently watchable, but you know, in a vacuum, like take all of these racers out of the equation, it's not a great leg.
Yeah, I can see that. I think what I really enjoyed about it, it wasn't even as much about, I like the difficulty of the detour, especially, which really dominated the second half of the episode. But what I liked about it is the how many tasks we had. And you really look, we have four tasks that were not just drive here or drive there, that actually required some sort, something to do something more. So great. We have seen similar ones. But what I thought was good about this episode, even more than the others, and what we never see on the US version, is that with the exception of the roadblock, which was pretty straightforward, though that was nicely in place to watch people wipe out and fall on their faces, which is always fun. But in general, the other three, I felt like there was a chance for teams to both do better or do worse. Even the coffee delivery task, which is not on its surface fascinating, it just seemed like there was a lot of shifting around of placement. There was, I really like the idea of not every leg, because you do want to have things being new and more complicated. But at this point in the race, to have something where it's like, we're going to have you do a bunch of tasks in a row. Some of you aren't going to do well at some of them, and anything can happen. And that's what really I enjoyed beyond the character moments, with, like you said, were great.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You are right that this gave everybody a lot of opportunity to mix up the order. And we did see the order mix up quite a lot. And with the express passes in the mix, like that gives it even more of a chance to kind of shuffle things around. And somebody screws up, it's not just one screw up that's going to totally doom them. So you are right. And I think Amazing Race Canada excels at this, where they just pack a bunch of tasks right back to back to back to back. And everybody really has a chance to make up some ground if they can. And there's just so much more going on, I feel like, on Amazing Race Canada than Amazing Race US. I love that there's always something extra in addition to the detour and roadblock. And some episodes of Amazing Race UX, we don't even get both a detour and a roadblock.
Right. And it really stands out here, because it lends this area, this aura, excuse me, of unpredictability to the show. And it's not that we want bad teams to do well or good teams to be eliminated. But when you combine that with the fact, like we mentioned in the preview and throughout, that they cast a lot of teams that seem pretty evenly matched, where you have seven teams remaining. And in general, I don't know about Andrea and Ebony, just because I feel like they have weaknesses, but they still could, they could last for a while. But in general, I look at these seven teams and I say, who knows? You know, there's strong teams, there's teams that are smarter. It could go so many different ways. And I really like that.
Yeah, that's true. That was something I definitely wanted to talk about, because I think we went into this season, and I think all three of us, you, me, and Mike, kind of agreed that there were three teams that we didn't think were going to do all that great, that didn't seem on their face to be as competitive as the rest of the field. And look at this, we're at the end of episode three, all three of those teams are gone.
Yeah, and that's, and it's not just about, oh, I mean, we are all very smart people. But the good thing about that is that you look at this group and you're like, this is going to be fun. These teams are going to battle it out. And I really like that, because it's not that basically you have not lost a team yet. So I think your team is in great shape, but the two teams Mike and I pick a last, and then Team Rob, were eliminated. So it shows just how good everyone was, because really 1 to 6, 1 to 7, you could flip things around completely. And speaking of that, I did go through and figured out the average placement for all the teams that are remaining. And it was not a complicated math problem. It was basically an Excel spreadsheet. But if you look at it right now, and I don't know, can you take a guess at which team is front and center, right? They're all close, but what team has done the best so far of who's left?
Well, I'm going through like who we've got left in the race. I'm going to say, let's see. I think I'm going to say Zed and Shabir are doing very well. At first place finish really didn't hurt them any. And I guess it's either them or Karen and Bert.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because Zed and Shabir, they have their average placements 4, which ties them for second with Team Giver and with Corey and Ivana. Karen and Bert average places 5th, which amazingly puts them second last. The team that has done the best so far is Sam and Paul because they've gotten 3-3-4. We've barely seen them on the show, but their average is 3.67. And so the point is, it's not even about where they all really fall. It's that they're all so close. Andrea and Ebony are the worst, and their average spot is 5.3, which is like because they had that second place. And not to get too much into the weeds and lose all of our listeners, but my point is that pretty much every team is averaging about 4th place, which means who knows? It's a rare thing to have so much parity. There's no team that's running away with it.
I think that's fantastic because, you know, what are the most boring seasons of this show ever? They're the ones where there's one or two teams that dominates and then that team ends up winning and we can all go home. You know, like I'm thinking specifically of like the Megan and Shane season and like the Rachel and Dave season. And, you know, even arguably, you know, as much as we loved Megan and Natalie season 2, it was like, oh, wow, they're going to win another leg. And I don't think it necessarily made it less boring that Mickey and Pete ended up getting ahead of them in the final leg at the very beginning and then taking it out from under them.
Right, because that season is great, and it also stands out because it was the first time they'd gone overseas, and there were some cool teams. But if you just look at unpredictability of results or whatever, even with Gino and Jesse the next season, it's like we called them pretty early, and then they had one bad leg, and they won. I don't think we're going to have that situation this season. Last season was cool. Even though we picked the winners, there was a lot of shifting from like 2 to 5, and there were surprises. It's even going to be crazier, I think, this season.
Yeah, I'm really very much looking forward to that. Even though I have to admit to being a little bit disappointed, I really, after watching the Cousins take first place last week, I really, really wanted them to be that team, that sort of Frankie and Amy type team that just keeps doing way better than anybody expected. And it's really sad to me that we don't get one of those teams this year.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, too, is it wasn't like, I mean, they did finish the task and finish ahead only by a short time of Andrea and Ebony. So it wasn't a case where they just like what I thought might happen, where they just hit a task and they just failed. Now, granted, they were really bad at that other detour. But with the exception of, I think, Karen and Bird and Sam and Paul, most teams were not very good at the metal detour. So they didn't do bad task wise. And it was sad because you could kind of see where the edit was going. And it was like I wanted to just like send the mental signals into the pass to say, use the express pass, please. You're in good shape. You can knock someone out. And it's just too bad because they were eliminated basically because they thought, which they did, they could finish quickly, but it was just too tight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we need to talk about this a little bit. We need to talk out the 3 different uses of the express pass and whether or not we think they are smart uses of the express pass. And we can go ahead and start with the Cousins. And I think it's easy to say in the moment that, no, that wasn't smart because they went out with an express pass in their pocket. But let's unpack it a little bit, Dan. Like, do you think, honestly, if you were in the same moment, like, say you and I are trying to blacksmith things, and I'm sure we'd be about as good as the Cousins at that. And we're seeing the other teams around us, and we know we can knock the pottery out pretty quickly. So we go up, we switch, and we're starting the pottery. We know that lots of other teams were still the blacksmithing task at that time. Do you think, honestly, that you would have made the same call?
It's possible. That's why I don't really want to be too hard on them. It's really easy to look at this and say, well, that was stupid. But I feel like that is a little results based because let's say they had somehow driven past Team Giver and they and, you know, gotten out in 6th or 7th and Kenneth and Ryan had been eliminated. We'd be like, oh, my gosh, Team Giver, that was so dumb, you know. So we can't just do that. To me, though, in both cases, I feel like they when you're down to it and you see one other team against you, And I know their thought was that, and they didn't know they were going to forget their fanny pack and have to come back. And it's hard to say how much that cost them. It could have, given how close it was. My thought with the Express Pass is always, it's kind of like an immunity idol. We say it with Survivor. If you have doubts, use it. I think there is the flip side of that with like Karen and Bert, where you use it too early. But in this case, I don't think it's as bad as being at a roadblock, being 10 feet from the pit stop and watching other teams check in and somehow not doing it. This is not a John and Jessica situation, but I can't totally let them off the hook either, because once you got down to a few teams, I feel like worst case, if one person, because they had two of them there, you know, one of them's doing the second pottery, run over there and see if anybody's left on the other side, you know, just check. Because a few seconds could have made a difference.
You know, are they allowed to do that though, Dan? Because I think the previous rules, like at least in the early seasons of the US version, the rules are you can't be more than 20 feet from your partner unless there's like a specific roadblock situation that requires them to, you know, go up in an airplane or whatever.
That's a good point. So I'll revise that a bit. Maybe, and again, this is so armchair quarterbacking though, because I say maybe they finish one and they should run over there. But let's say that time they think would be better spent just finishing. So I feel like when you have an express pass, you shouldn't think beyond this leg, but it's not so egregious to think that if they had just survived, they'd have a huge leg up next week. But I don't know. I think them and Team Giver both got a little too cute with it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think what's happening here, I would call it, and regardless of whether or not Megan and Courtney have ever seen this season, because I think at this point it may have premiered before they were born, but I would call it like a fear of a hay bale task. Like, you know approximately how hard these arts and crafts related tasks are going to be, but what you don't know is in the next leg, whether or not you're going to be faced with unroll hay bales for 8 hours. Right. So I think their line of reasoning was, we want to make sure, like, we think we can outrun any of these people. We think we can finish ahead of them. We're going to be okay in that regard. So let's save the express pass for the hay bales.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because the Amazing Race Canada will have tasks like a Mentos task or something really just really mentally complicated. Go memorize this and then sing it, or do a really complicated food order or something that isn't exactly like the hay bales physically, but is a similar type thing. And so I can understand that. And there's also a possibility the teams might have thought this was non-elimination, because you only have 10 teams on the race. I think there's a good chance next week will be a non-elimination, especially the first one overseas. So they may have thought that and kind of assumed, well, worst case, if we're last, we'll move on.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. About both things, actually. And there's no way next week is not a non-elimination leg. Is that safe to say?
Oh, yeah. And then they did this last season, too, I think. When you're going to fly everybody over there, they're probably going to spend two legs in China or in that area. Why not? And I just don't think they're going to drop down to six teams so quickly, too. I mean, there's only 10. We're already down to seven. I would think we're more likely to have these seven stay, especially going overseas. And obviously, they didn't know they were going overseas next week, but they could have just done the math. And we're not going to have teams talk about it too much, probably for editing's sake. But you would think that might have been in the back of their head, because you even saw the way they reacted when he even kind of paused, John did, and said, "And I'm sorry to tell you, you're eliminated." And I thought he might say it was a non-elimination. So I wonder if that was on their minds a bit. I haven't read any of their exit press, or there's been a few interviews that have been written where they might have said that. But regardless, it's an unfortunate way for any team to go out.
Yeah, it is. And I was really sorry to see them go, because they were so goofy, and I wanted them to be that team that I'm, you know, the underdogs that I'm rooting for, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I give them credit. Like, I kind of wasn't the kindest ever I could have been to them in the preview, but I found them pretty endearing, and that's pretty much the case across the whole cast. But they didn't stand out to me, and it wasn't a case even like Aaron and Deb where I thought, oh, well, you know, it's okay if they're gone or whatever. I would have been fine if they stayed. I mean, I would have been sad for the other team that got eliminated, whichever one of those last three it was, but it would have been okay. So I guess we should move on. Team Giver, who barely survived by choosing to use their express pass. And I don't think, unlike Megan and Courtney, where I felt like they had two possibilities to survive, use the express pass or possibly finish the task and get a little bit luckier with driving and running. Team Giver, I felt like, had one way out, and it was the express pass, because they didn't switch detours. And those guys with that judge, I mean, who knows how long they were there?
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think kudos to them for recognizing that this was the time to burn that express pass. And I really had no quibble with that, because they were at a very difficult task. They were not really making friends with that judge, and they knew they were in trouble, and they could sense that if they didn't use it, they were probably going home. So, yeah, I mean, good on you, Giver, for givering up the express pass.
Yeah, the main issue is I think they almost waited too long because of how close it was. Because, you know, once they hadn't even gotten one of their two that they had to do done. So it wasn't a case like they were just really close to finishing. They were, who knows how long, an hour away or something. So they almost, like, you could sense that they were going back and forth and back and forth. And they did check and they saw a few teams. But I don't know what happened where they did use it and then they were still in the car. I guess it was that close in terms of time, because they really, any edge they got by using it before the others finished was gone just like that.
Yeah, that's true. It really seemed like this was a very tight leg, but not to a fault. I think it just, like, everybody was there all at once. And I think, as we've noted already, it was harder than to determine, like, how much trouble you really were in, which probably accounts for how long it took them to use that pass. Because I think there was a lot of overthinking it, like trying to figure out, well, really, like, how close is everybody to being done? How many teams are technically behind us if we hand over that pass right now? I mean, I can't quibble with it too much. I don't even think they waited too long. I think they knew there were two more teams there. That gives you a buffer. That gives you, like, a little bit of room in case you get lost, which it seems like they may have done.
Yeah. And they didn't mess around too. They did the right thing in terms of the getting out of the car and running. You saw they meant business. And I think that type of approach makes a huge difference. And not that the other teams didn't, but those few seconds where they basically pulled in and they were out of the car before they basically stopped the car, that makes a difference to a point. Yeah. So,
and
competitiveness will help.
Yeah. We will set aside the fact that they appear to have gotten lost in the town where they went to college.
Yet were very efficient with their driving, apparently.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, good for them. I think we're going to come back to the driving, because I think this is an interesting task, but I think we got to close out the express pass talk. We got to talk about Karen and Bert.
Oh, Karen and Bert. See, I did find it very entertaining when they were driving to the pit stop and thought they were first and they were fifth. But it does show you and how teams didn't really know where they were, because even with the teams that finished higher than them being so surprised. But I guess we'll cover that in a little later. But in terms of the express pass, in theory, I feel like their move saved them time, did give them a leg up a bit, because they were able to get ahead and not be as pressured on the detour. However, it's tricky because, in a sense, you can obviously say it was too early. They should have used it on the detour. They didn't save that much time with the coffee. They didn't really know how many tasks were left. The issue I have is their reasoning seemed to be, we want to use this so we can finish first, which is not my favorite way to use an express pass.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if we are ranking the smartness of express pass use here, I put this at the bottom. Like, this seems like, I mean, granted, easy come, easy go, I guess. Like, they're not, I think they're banking on being able to do whatever's thrown at them. And they thought, like, they got a little cocky and they just assumed, like, we're going to be good at everything. So we might be good at this task that's coming up, but let's just skip it and be first just for funsies. Like, this is a very early season Amazing Race US kind of move where people would go after the fast forward. Like, I'm thinking season one, Robin Brennan going for that fast forward right away because they're like, hey, we want to be first.
Yeah. And you can see it. It's no guarantee. And that's the interesting thing about them. I really like Karen and Bert. I think they have a good relationship. But they're one of the few teams that I feel like the edit is kind of showing us them being a little more arrogant. And we saw it a bit even with the detour where they're like, oh, we've got it. We're so, this is done. And the guy was like, nope. It's not. And they eventually finished it. But the edit really made a point. And then, you know, a lot of teams might be driving to the pit stop saying, we're going to be first, we're going to be first, whatever. And it's often not shown. But the edit made a point to show them repeatedly going, yeah, I can't wait to be first. This is going to be amazing. He was there. You could tell he was prepared for some sort of big jump or dance or something. And then just fell to the ground like, oh, my gosh. So I wonder going forward if we can track that, because it's not that I expect them to do something horrible or whatever, but they have to be careful because they know they're a good team, but there are a lot of good teams. And even that use of the express pass, though they had gotten lost and were in last, so I can understand that. But focusing on first is dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's a rookie mistake. Like, that's Bush League. You want to focus on not being last. And I know that doesn't rack you up lots of sweet trips, but it does keep you in the race and it keeps you one step closer to the $1 million.
Right. And you're seeing some of these other teams that don't seem that concerned. Like, I expected some of the like really athletic teams like Adam and Andrea or Corey and Ivana kind of to have that we need to be first kind of attitude more. Cause you see that with some of the more physical teams, those teams, I mean, they'll finish seventh, they'll finish high. I mean, yes, Corey and Ivana were close to getting eliminated last week, but those teams seem to have this attitude. Like, we're going to show up, we're going to do the test, we're going to finish. Hey, we're in it. Great. I mean, some point to more ridiculously happy, you know, make me smile kind of moments, but they have the right attitude. And that's when I look at the top three this week, including Zed and Shabir, who did get first and won a trip to Chicago. But I look at these teams and I say, those teams all have the right attitude. Those three are going to be around for a while, barring something weird.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Although I would say we got to count on something weird.
Yeah, and U-turns, at some point, there will probably be a U-turn, I suspect, and that could really wreak havoc with anything.
Yeah, I'm always looking forward for the U-turn because I think it's in the race to stay, and it becomes just kind of the only thing you can hang your drama on is the U-turn. So if you have a beef with another team, you just keep looking ahead to that U-turn like, yeah, well, if you're going to be a jackass, we're going to U-turn you. Or, you know, if you're going to be a threat, we're going to U-turn you. And they can't not have one of those coming up. I would say probably we would have seen it in the preview. So I'm going to say 2 weeks from now, we see a U-turn.
Yeah, and that'll likely be, if we go along with our thoughts, that'll likely be an elimination leg. And who knows, somebody will probably have a speed bump. That leg is destined to be a challenge. And the show generally is not take it easy on racers when they go to other countries. I find sometimes those are some of the hardest legs they do the last few seasons. So who knows? I mean, because really, you look at all these teams, like I just talked about how these top three were doing so well, but Adam and Andrea had a seventh place finish. So did Corey and Ivana. So now I'm going to contradict myself. But I think, who knows? We've got, you know, Steady Eddies, Sam and Paul, who just kind of show up and they do the task and they finish third and they move on.
I'm going to revise my prediction about Sam and Paul. I had them as my winner pick. I have a new prediction about them based on what we've seen of them so far. I think Sam and Paul are our third place team. I think they are the Nick and Matt of this season. I think they're the Rob and Ryan of this season. I think they're that team where we're like, oh, they're still there. Okay. Yeah, there's four teams left. It's like this guy, this guy, this guy, and this guy, and this guy. I know there's one more team. Who is it? Oh, right. It's Sam and Paul.
Yeah, I think that's likely. And I think if who knows what will happen, but I'm going to throw this out there now. I think Corey and Ivana are going to win. And I think second place is going to be, that's a tough one. I'm going to say Zed and Shabir, and fourth place is Team Giver.
Yeah.
But we'll see. They just have that fourth place vibe.
Yep. They have the, they have the Jet and Dave edit written all over them. Or, you know, so many teams is like the fan favorite fourth place curse. We got our beauty queens. We've got, you know,
Fawn.
Yeah.
Or were they fifth place?
No, they were fifth place, but
yeah,
we have, you know, Mike and Rochelle. We have any number of people go out in fourth place. Cha-cha-cha.
Right. Yeah. There's so many, and I hate to think ahead of time, but I just throwing it out there. I will probably be wrong, but it does. I think going back to your Sam and Paul thing, I think they're very steady, and the Nick and Matt comparison is pretty accurate, though I don't think they'll talk as much about finishing first. No one will ever talk as much about finishing first, well, except for the reporters. But they do seem like they're going to be around, and we'll likely learn more. And they seem like nice guys that have a good relationship and are really laid back. All those things lead to doing well in the show, but we're just not seeing that much of them.
Yeah, and you know, they could be. I would say at this point in season two, we had not seen very much of Mickey and Pete. We had thought that they were going to be these giant goofballs, and then they were pretty much invisible until the second overseas trip. So maybe there are hidden depths to Sam and Paul. And I think I want to stress here, like, we call them boring. We rag on them quite a bit for this, and we're only on episode 3. And I think we've called them boring about 53 times at this point. But any person who's cast for one of these reality shows is going to be the most interesting person you've ever hung out with, regardless of whether they are invisible or not. Like, they all get cast for a reason. These guys have something to them. We just may not ever see it. They may just be one of those teams that, unfortunately, they don't have time to get around to telling their story because they don't win. They do okay, but not spectacularly. They don't screw up hard. It's just they're kind of there. They're the 10th team, and they're always going to be around. I think Rob and Ryan might be the most apt comparison there, because at least Nick and Matt got a little bit of talk about being first. Rob and Ryan, like, what did they ever do?
Yeah, and Nick and Matt had the wrestling thing, especially when they got to wrestle. So that was the high point of my year when I saw that. But and I don't mean to pick on Nick and Matt, because I do think they had more personality in their, you know, the confessionals we saw than some teams. And it tells you, though, it's a good sign if Sam and Paul are the boring team, because they're not, to me, the most boring team that's ever been on The Amazing Race at all. It's a really good sign for who you have. And a lot of it, too, is where they're finishing. I think I mentioned this last week. It's like you finish third, you finish fourth. There's a lot of teams. You're not at the top. You're not at the bottom. You're not the first one to get to a task. So you don't get to explain it. You don't get to try and figure it out. You're just the team that shows up, like we saw with the detour, with the metal smithing. Karen and Bert got all the shots of them doing it because they were the first one who completed it. Other teams come up, they're not going to show them as much unless they're terrible, like, you know, Megan and Courtney and Team Giver. Then you're going to see them fail because that's entertaining. But they're kind of in the middle. They don't really fail completely. They just kind of go.
Yeah, they just kind of, you know, they do the tasks. They do what's expected of them. You know, they are moderately nice to each other and along the way. And I think if we see along the way, like maybe if the U-turn comes up, we might discover that they have some like unexplored beef with some other teams. They just randomly U-turn somebody. That'll make them more interesting. I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here.
Yeah. So I understand that fact, because we've seen him here and there and not enough to really say a lot more. Well, so I know we've been talking for a while. Should we quickly go over some of the tasks we haven't talked about? I mean, I don't know how much there is to say, but I feel like we should give each task a little bit of time here before we go to questions.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we should talk a little bit about this driving task, because I got to be honest, this is like one of my favorite little side task things. And this was something I'm going to just go ahead and call this exactly the same thing that happened in Amazing Race Australia versus New Zealand, where there was an episode where everybody got a Fitbit, or I don't know if it was a Fitbit per se. It was like a fitness tracker, and they were given a goal, and it was not necessarily something that rewarded people being the best at something. It was just, you would count your steps, and whoever had the closest, whoever's step count was closest to their partner's, would end up winning a prize at the end of the leg. And this was something, it was like a little side quest, I guess the nerds would call it. And it didn't necessarily take a lot of time out of the episode. It was a little chance to give some product placement, and it was a chance to kind of have something else going on that might reward a random team. And I think this is exactly what we got with this Chevy task. They had to drive the most efficiently. Like, how do you even do that? And you had people talking about, oh, I'm a very efficient driver. Yeah, you don't know that. You're making that up.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know how much it relates, because we have a Prius, and I will generally drive it, and it tells you when you finish your drive how many like miles per gallon you got. And I'm so bad at it. And my wife will be like, I got 75, and I'll do the same trip and get 50. So I think it's the way is, you don't hit the gas pedal too much. You just kind of glide along. And if you had said which team will just glide along and not hit the gas too much, Team Giver would not be the choice that I would make for doing that. I would think, especially being at home, they'd be like, we're in a hometown. Yeah, let's go. Instead, I assume that maybe not getting lost helped them in that way. I like this too, just because it's like, I would rather see them do it with the Chevy Volt rather than, hey, here's this big truck, let's haul some wood or something, which they've done other times. That's cool. But it's fun to see it with the little electric car, that's the task. And I had almost forgotten about it. Like at the end, John's like, oh, let's bring in all the teams. And I was like, what is happening? What is the big surprise? And I had totally forgotten that. And the way they did it was fun, because, you know, you were able to announce it in front of the group and the group got to have something together. Yeah, I just like how they did it. And it didn't overwhelm the episode. The worst would have been, and this would have happened if there were only two tasks, is to have lots and lots of time with teams tracking their efficiency and driving, because that could have got old fast.
That is true. And I think we need to be totally fair about this. We have seen this efficient driving sort of task before Amazing Race Season 25. And we had one of the all-time favorite glide-along teams, friends of the podcast, Keith and Whitney, ended up passing that task. And I think it was not a competition so much as you had to be this efficient in order to get an extra clue.
Right. Yeah. And Keith and Whitney, the more time now we're bringing them up on Canada, it's just there's so many ways we can talk about their greatness.
Yeah, they're really like clearly one of the greatest teams of all time, as far as things we can reference on Amazing Race podcasts. But I was thinking about that and trying to remember the exact mechanics of that, but it was yet another side quest, and I like as much as you can inject some sort of other intrigue. And I think I've even brought this particular type of task up before in the realm of, like, you could make this the express pass task. I think you could easily say, like, there's something going on alongside whatever you're doing, and it's not necessarily something that you will intuitively be good at, or something that you even can think about too hard. But if you beat the other teams, you get the express pass. I think that's an easier way to do it than to, you know, give it out randomly like Amazing Race US has been doing, or, you know, make it something findable on this ropes course. I think the findable on the ropes course is the closest to perfect that I've seen an express pass quest.
Yeah, I like your idea better, though. And I also like how it's spread across a whole leg. So it feels less random because, you know, we saw where any team could have found those express passes on the ropes course, but Team Giver got all three. So you do something like this and you say the top team or the top two teams get one, or who knows? There's a lot of different variations, and it doesn't have to be the efficient driving. Like you mentioned, the Fitbit task, which I think is good. I would love it if you did it where, like you mentioned, they had to have the same as their partner, like the fewest steps. Like how could they, whoever has the fewest steps, which I know doesn't really encourage athletic moves and stuff. It almost, but I just think it would be interesting to see if you could finish the task and be so efficient in your movement of stuff. But there's so many different ways you could do it. It's an interesting idea. Or how about you go through a town and like with cabs and everything, who spends the least amount of money? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that too. I'm kind of reminded of this YouTube video I saw recently where it was a foot race, and there were five people running a foot race, and the objective was to come in fifth place.
So how do you, I mean, but you can't just stop and just
Or I think there might have been six people and the objective was to come in fifth place, which I think was more interesting. And so they were all like moving very slowly and all like watching each other move.
They're waiting for one team to completely stop or not go, and everyone else stops or they move really slow. Wow, we're just coming up with great ideas here. You just Amazing Race Canada, you have a face off and the goal is not to win.
Yeah, well, hey, shout out to Mikey the Chimp. If you're going to be talking to Bertram anytime soon, pitch him some more ideas from our podcast. We love it.
Yes, there's. The drink a beer task is still out there, still waiting for it from last two seasons.
We got close. They went to a brewery
twice. I think they've gone to two different breweries and never drank a beer.
They did. All right. Well, we're getting way off track now.
I'd gone now through the fourth podcast and not mentioned the drink a beer task. So, you know, it was coming to that point. Okay. So, yes, the next task then, the tents. We've seen those a lot. And I actually thought it would be harder because it seemed like they had to traverse this giant area of land so they wouldn't remember. But I didn't really realize they could just write everything down. Though for me, this did lead to some very nice drawings there by Andrea to really almost break the task with her diagramming.
I thought that was beautiful. And you know, how many tasks on this race ever reward graphic design skills?
Yet another task I would be really bad at. But so what do you think? Did you think the good move here was to work with other teams or in order to move forward?
I think so. I think this is something where, again, everybody has to come up with the same answer. You're not battling it out for last place. Go ahead and work with another team. I think it's definitely worthwhile. And I liked this task as far as it was a pretty good memory task. And I think they weren't sure right out of the gate. Like they knew you had 18 things to look for and you had to mark the thing that was different, but you didn't know how it was going to be different. So there was a little aspect of like, okay, I'm going to look at each one of these things, but I don't know necessarily what exactly I'm looking for. And it wasn't always intuitive in a lot of cases. Like the tent flap, for example, like everybody got tripped up on the tent flap. And I thought that was actually a really simple, an elegant task. It showcased the natural beauty. It gave an opportunity to put some product placement in there. And I know people have mixed feelings about product placement. I personally, if you can do it without being obnoxious, which I think this one did, it keeps the lights on your show. And it, you know, it's better than struggling to stay on the air because you don't have sponsors, right?
Yeah, and it took me a minute to realize that Woods was a sponsor and a company because he's like, Woods, they've been around. And I was like, what is he talking about?
Oh, Woods have been around.
Yeah,
I know. Old growth forest, dude.
Yeah, and then I had forgotten that was one of the new sponsors this season, I think. So it made sense. And yeah, I didn't mind the product placement there at all. I feel like this show in general is better with it and then the US, which I feel like you should just subtitle our podcast. It's better than the US version. but in that, I try to be fair, but I do think it's less blatant because they don't have as much time for it because we didn't really spend that much time on this test. John gave his little spiel. We saw, you know, these very beautiful tents from Woods with their materials. But it was fun. I like seeing different teams working together too. You have Corey and Ivana working with Zed and Shabir. You've got Andrea and Ebony working with Adam and Andrea. You know, that could be a little confusing if they didn't pronounce their names right. But you just see different teams having to work together. And I know, I think I was called out on this that last week I said, for the first task of a leg, you shouldn't work together. But I will give the exception that I think in this case, it was okay because they're so early and you're kind of all over. You don't want to be that team that's standing there by yourself and doesn't know anything. Luckily, Team Giver almost became that team, but you want someone to be there with you.
Right. It's kind of like if you're driving somewhere and there's a posted speed limit and you would like to exceed the speed limit. You need to find someone else who's also exceeding the speed limit and you need to drive with them.
Right. Or you can just watch someone go by faster and be like, well, at least I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
That guy's going 100. I'm only going 75 or whatever. But yeah, I get the point. It's basically, and also it's a kind of task where it's not like solving a math problem or something that's more individual in a way. Well, that, I don't know if the math problem is the best example, but it's not something where you just need to figure out one thing and you both had to figure it out and you could gain a lot by leaving that team in the dust. By working together, you get into passing other teams because you're able to narrow down your choices.
Yeah, exactly. It's multi-part and you can split it up and you know, it's a case of four heads being better than two.
Right. And most teams seem to not have a huge problem with that. So I thought it would be, I tend to do this a lot on this show where John will give this really complicated explanation. He sells it. And I think that's the hardest task they've ever done on the show. And then everyone just kind of does it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a little overboard. You know, where people, even with the pottery, I was like, no one's ever going to be able to do that. That looks so hard. And most teams seem to do okay. Some had never done it before and did it very easily.
Well,
so
I think the question is, Dan, have you ever done this yourself?
Looked at a tent? No, the pottery? Yeah. Never. I've never done that. I have never done the metalsmithing. I have drank coffee before. I have not swung into the water, which I could do that because I'm a good swimmer. But in general, as you can see, this leg was, again, like most legs, things Dan would struggle at. I really need that express pass for the detour, I think.
You probably needed all three express passes, if we're being honest.
Well, I think that, or a good partner, because you did see some teams with the pottery where only one person could do it. The other person was so bad at it. And so if you have the right partner, then you're fine.
Well, I guess my question then is, how do you feel about that? Like, do you think that it's too much of a allowing one partner to be dead weight? Or do you think it's fair to let somebody kind of do the whole task?
You know, I have mixed feelings because we also saw this with the shooting last week, where I think they had to alternate so many shots, but they didn't have to, neither one had to get so many. I got the impression that one person could get all of them. And we're kind of seeing that across the board with this. I don't think any of the, either detour this week again had that way. I understand it because, you know, in Amazing Race Canada, you know, the penalty season, you would have teams that, something like this, teams would just take a penalty because you have somebody saying, I'll never do it. I can't do it. So this is a way to avoid penalties and things like that, because you feel like the odds are good one person can do it.
Yeah. All right. And I think it's okay as long as they don't do it every leg, because then you start to run into that thing where, like the early seasons of Amazing Race US, where one person did all the roadblocks.
Yeah, and that is the trick, because when you have like this leg, you have four tasks. Only one is the roadblock, and the roadblock was doable by basically everyone, even the people that were afraid of heights, of course. So you really could have a case where if one team member is good, I mean, the coffee, it's not really a good example, but even with this detour, it did kind of make it easier for some. That's why I did enjoy teams that were both like Corey and Ivana, where they both did one, they both finished, and hey, that got them from last into second place. So I guess the way I could put it is, if both team people could do it, you had a huge advantage. So maybe in that sense, it wasn't as bad, where because it gave you such an edge, However, I would like to see them push it where some of the team members get to do more, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Are there other tasks that we haven't gone into at all yet? Like, we talked about the swing, but what is there to say about the swing? It's one of those like thrill tasks that doesn't require any skill whatsoever, is kind of fun to look at.
Yeah, I did. The thing about that, there's not that much to talk about. I did notice at first teams seem to swing and drop correctly. And at some point in the middle, teams just started slamming into the water. And I also did notice the first time they did it, we got a nice Wilhelm scream there that got thrown in there.
Yep, I heard that.
which is, you know, hard to dislike that when it's used properly. But the main thing with this is that a few people like, you know, Bert chooses it and then is afraid of heights and water, which was not a good combination. But like, people were afraid, but really they all did it. And I don't mind tasks like this when they don't occupy too much of the episode. So I was okay with it.
Yeah, there's only so much time you can devote to, I don't think I can do this. This looks scary. This is impossible. I have a pathological phobia of heights. Let's cut to commercial and come back. I don't think I can do this. Oh, and I did it.
Yeah, Andrea got to have that cut, that commercial cut here during this one, I think. So,
yeah, but even she was not selling it.
There was no Scott from season 29 at this point. There was no, I don't think we saw any crying. It was more kind of like, yeah, that looks really high. Yeah, I don't really like this. And then a minute later, we got to do it. So it wasn't too much. Though this task looked fun, where there are some heights tasks, like I don't really, the bungee jumping where you actually dive head first, that would freak me out. This one, I was like, oh, I'll jump in the water. It's cool. If you're not a good swimmer, though, I understand. But they did have those big flotation devices, which did lead to teams just kind of laying on their back and floating towards it, which was kind of entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they devoted just about the right amount of time to this task.
Yeah. Any more, and it would have been, we saw them fly in. Okay, let's move on. Let's get to the detour where the real drama was. So I think we've covered the detour pretty well. Are we ready for questions? I did want to mention again, I love seeing the athletic team still be so amazed and thrilled. Corey did some sort of, we had the Corey Ivana song, which I enjoyed in the car. And I always like dorky songs from teams that look like, you know, they spend a lot of time in the weight room. And then they had his dance when they finished second. It made me think, oh, I knew I liked them because they seem kind of odd, like oddballs, but I really like that team, and I just want to throw that in there again because they've just been fun every leg so far.
They might end up being that team that we did not anticipate would be the entertaining team with a sense of humor, like the sort of Julian Lowell or even the Brian and Cynthia. I think there's always that one team you don't expect to be funny that are very funny.
Yeah, they're a lot of fun. They have a really dry sense of humor about it, which they don't take themselves that seriously. And I've seen the similar thing. And Adam is also kind of an oddball too, more than I expected. I expected, like, we may have even mentioned, you know, that we didn't know what was going to happen with him. He might be kind of on the more irritating side, but he's also kind of dorkier and goofier than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody's just like the same level of intense, like we said earlier, this is going to be a great season.
Yeah. All right. Well, should we dive into questions?
Let's do it.
First of all, I want to thank everyone. The questions there were many questions and cool comments from a lot of different people. And that's awesome. It's really fun, even before I seen the episode, to see so many cool questions, to know you guys are excited about it.
Yeah. And like you were saying earlier, Dan, it was indicative, like, we obviously can't watch it live because we don't live in Canada. It was indicative that we were in for a treat when people started adding us, like, in the middle of the episode. We knew something crazy was going to go down, and I for one, I couldn't wait to see what actually happened.
Yeah, you even mentioned, I think when Team Giver gave Megan and Courtney the express pass really early on for almost, you know, not getting anything in return, though they did, I already had people tweeting me like, oh, I can't believe they gave it to him right away. And I'm like, I don't know what this is about, but that's cool. I don't really want to know. So it was great. All right. So I'm going to start with what I think is an interesting question from Rainer or Rainer Johnson. Why do teams go from first to last more often on Canada than in the US version? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think these legs are typically fairly tight, and I think there's a better mix of abilities and a mix of tasks requiring different things. Like, I think the US version, a lot of legs end up being very badly designed because tasks are either extremely easy for everybody or extremely hard for most of everybody. And that ends up, like, season 24 is the one you look at. You can look at how everybody placed every leg, and it was like wherever they started was usually where they finished. And I think having more tasks gives people a chance to catch up, because the more tasks you have, the better chance you have that you're going to rock one of them and make up some time.
Right, right. And that was, but I mean, my point was about the task, because really you look at this leg and let's say this is, you know, they just got lazier. You do the roadblock with the swinging, you do the detour. The detour is hard, but if you just do those two, the roadblock's kind of ho-hum. There's really no way to gain on the roadblock. It all comes down to the detour. So basically, you have a case where if teams get there early and they're, you know, they may, maybe there isn't much switch up because of the four tasks and all the navigation. Who knows what can happen?
Yeah, exactly. Like, two tasks bad, four tasks good. It's yes. My Animal Farm quote.
Very nice. All right. So what do you think we should go to next? There's so many good ones.
I know. There's so many great ones. Well, I think Jessica Frey had a good point. She said, why did everyone not do the pottery unless they had the strength for steel? Pottery isn't that hard, and people made it seem like it was the worst thing ever. And I think this goes back to, Dan, you've never tried this. I've done a little pottery in my life, and she's absolutely right. If I was looking at blacksmithing and pottery, like, I don't even need to lift up that hammer to know that I'm going to be better at the pottery.
Yeah, and I think, too, the tricky part, the blacksmith, on a lesser show, it would just be a physical task, and it would be, you have to hammer this thing, it gets made, you're done. On this show, it was hammering plus being very intricate. And in that case, it was too much. But personally, I would have been bad at both, like I mentioned. And my wife has taken pottery classes, and she said it is very hard to make the cups they were making. However, I don't feel like the judging was that difficult. I think the judging was tougher for some reason. I mean, and I know there's producers that really do the judging, so I don't want to pick on the kind of endearing, mean judge. But I think they were a little easier on the pottery than, like, these were not pots that you would be, the cups that would be in restaurants.
Yeah, that's true. And well, I think there was a very specific metric to that, too. And I think that would kind of inform my choice as well, because it looked like the task judge was eyeballing the metal hooks, whereas the task judge at the pottery was measuring them with a ruler. And it looked like if you got your cup up above a certain height, then you passed the task.
Right. And that's hard to know up front, because somebody who's never done pottery might just be like, well, I can hammer something. That's not a big deal. Not thinking that once you kind of figured out the hang of it, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to not fall apart. And you did see some people just fall apart. But even people that struggled early, like, you know, did figure it out eventually in most cases. Though I don't know if Team Giver would have figured it out. It just doesn't seem like it's right up their alley. But they didn't really give it a shot, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, it is. Well, shall we talk about the task judges while we brought it up?
Oh, sure. You know, we did have the I'll combine both of these. I'll mention both. Derek Etherton said, which teacher was more endearing, the kind art teacher or snarky shop teacher? And then James Ong said, has the blacksmith dude task judge surpassed Mr. Pencils Down on the curmudgeon index? So I'll do the second one. I would say no on that. I think I like the task judge because so many task judges are boring. I like his personality. But I'll let you correct me if you think I'm wrong. I don't think he's got the level of Mr. Pencils Down yet.
Nobody has the level of Mr. Pencils Down. I mean, you're messing with the classics here. But I thought I've never seen a task judge like really lose it at somebody the way that that guy did at Megan and Courtney. Like, he had zero patience for that. And my only theory on that is that they must have been doing something that was a real safety concern that might have like resulted in one of them getting branded if he hadn't stepped in and yelled at them.
Oh, I don't mean, it's funny that you say a safety concern and branding and I'm laughing. That says a lot about me, I think. But yeah, that there's something outside of it. And also, I think he was someone that actually knew what he was doing, because you have some cases where people, I don't get the impression, especially let's say there's a dance task or something and they have someone there that sometimes is a very good dancer, but other times might not be. So in this case, he seemed to have a really personal connection to the blacksmithing, and that makes a big difference. I think he was very disappointed in their lack of skills.
Yeah, and blacksmithing is not something I myself have ever attempted, but I know people that have, and I really have to say that across the board, none of the blacksmiths that I've ever spent a great deal of time with are necessarily the most level-headed people.
Yeah. And he looked serious. I mean, guy spends a lot of time, I think, in his blacksmith shop or wherever he works. I hate to pick on the judge, though. If you're listening, blacksmith judge, you're the best.
Yeah, he was great. He was great television. I have no quibble with the blacksmithing judge. It was a little bit uncomfortable when he totally lost his temper, because you're just not used to seeing that from a judge.
Right. Okay. So we got a few other good questions here. So this is a very important question for me. Jess, how disappointed would you be? This is Lindsay Wilson on from the Rob is a Podcast Facebook group. How disappointed would you be to win a leg and be told after other winning teams won trips to New Zealand and Spain that you were just going to Chicago?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised at that one as well. It was like, really? Like, what if the team is like from Toronto? It's like a 1 hour flight. And it's Chicago, I'm sure, you know, no offense intended to the Windy City. It's a great little town. I'm sure you'd have a good time there. But yeah, I'd be thinking, but Megan and Courtney get to go to Auckland.
Yeah, and good for Megan and Courtney that now they're out of the race, yet they still get to have a really amazing ching, you know, amazing trip.
If you're going to win one, that's the one to win, right?
Yeah, it seems like it. I'm trying to look up real quickly. I don't know. You may know this. Where Zed and Shabir like live right now? Because they were the winners of the trip to Chicago. And so Zed and Shabir live in Vancouver. So the odds are good they haven't. I mean, who knows? They may have traveled enough where they've been to Chicago, but at least they don't live in Toronto. So that's at least something, right?
Yeah. I feel like Chicago is not a place you think of as a vacation destination unless you're like really into sports or pizza for some reason. Not to rag on Chicago, but I feel like that's a place you go on business and not necessarily, like, I don't think of that as a place you plan your vacation to, unless it's like a short weekend jaunt. But then again, you know, I'm from pretty close to there, so.
Yeah, that's the closest really big city to me. I mean, it's about a 4.5 hour drive, and it's a great weekend spot. But if I was on The Amazing Race and they said, you want a trip to Chicago, I'd be like, really? But that's also because I can drive there. So yeah. I'd be like, what about Thailand or Australia, you know, or something. But I do think they handled it well. They did not look super disappointed. I think Zed and Shabir were very thrilled to finish first, especially given this task and how it was going. So do you have something else to ask me here? Yeah, go ahead.
Wasn't there a team once that won a prize? Like, I'm trying to remember which episode. Like, it was an early season. They won a leg prize. It was one of the ones they don't really announce because they didn't have a sponsor. And Phil tells them they won it and they don't know what it is. I want to say it was like a catamaran, and they're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I forget which team that was, but they gave away a lot of sailing type things, I guess, because it relates to kind of the show going around the world and you could sail around the world, a lot of things like that early on. And I think I do remember a team being like, huh, what is this? And also, too, compared to a trip to New Zealand, I don't know if a catamaran is on the same level. The one season they just kept winning digital cameras, I think. So that was like the sponsor was like the Easy Share camera. And I think they kept winning it. And again, it's like, well, I know cameras were a bigger deal back then, but no, it makes the show dated a little bit.
I will amend my response on Chicago if that is like a 5-star deluxe trip, like they stay in like the presidential suite at the Drake Hotel and they get like box seats at a Cubs game and they go out for like super fancy food. And like, if they do it upright, then okay. Like you can go anywhere and like get the 5-star treatment and it's a great trip. So maybe that's what they're getting here.
Yeah. I mean, there are hotels that are not even the best on Michigan Avenue that are like $500 or $600 a night. So the nice ones, I mean, who knows, you know, it could, but who knows, they probably are staying at like the Hilton or something. But yeah. All right. So what else should we answer here? What do you think, Jess?
Let me see. I've taken a look here. I think Natalie Hatt had a good question. She said, does Tar Canada editing seem really frantic? There are also too many unnecessary confessionals where they just narrate the task.
You know, I noticed that in the premiere. I haven't noticed it as much lately. I think a lot relates to who is doing the narrating. I think some teams, when they narrate, it's just like, yes, we know. You have to go get the coffee. You have to deliver it or whatever they're doing. But other teams are more engaging, so it doesn't feel like they're narrating. So that might be part of it. I personally have not noticed, except for what we talked about in the premiere, that the editing was very different this season. It is frantic. I don't think it's worse than last season, but what do you think, Jess?
Yeah, it doesn't feel much worse. I think there's a lot more action because you have more tasks. So it does sometimes feel a little rushed compared to the US version. I think that might be part of what Natalie is experiencing here. And yeah, some of the narration does get a little tiresome. Thankfully, nothing this season on level of Gino and Jesse.
Yes. Well, we had to go do the task. And then we went and we did it and we were worried, but we finished first and now we will finish first again. That's all.
We performed this task.
It was not great. So Derek Sue, real quick from Facebook, he thinks we need even more express passes this season. What do you think? I think he says, do we need more? I am reading it as more this season. What do you think, Jess?
I think, well, we've talked about more in general. Like, you know, my feelings on everyone gets an express pass. But yeah, more this season. I would not be surprised to see more this season. I think they'll keep cropping up and get kind of the second wave of express passes where they become a little bit more important, where they might affect even more of the action. I think that's kind of irresistible to race production, especially since sometimes you have the express pass where you can kind of negate a U-turn by burning off your express pass. They're kind of hoping one's in play when you have a U-turn. So I think not only do we need more express passes, we are probably going to see some this season.
That's interesting. I would have guessed you'd say the opposite. I know you love the express passes, but my assumption was the show assumed these three would last them like to whenever they need to be used, episode 5 or 6 or whatever, probably the same episode as the U-turn. But I don't know. I wonder if they're going to do more. I don't hate it if they do. I just, you know, I think they might have, they added one more, like they had 2 and 3. Maybe that's it. Though I would love to see some sort of variation on it. But if they're going to do the usual, we'll have a fast forward, we'll have a U-turn, maybe they'll stop. But who knows? They could be going all in. It could be like Survivor Game Changers. They're just like, we're throwing every task. You do a face-off, then an intersection, and then an express pass. I don't think that will happen, but who knows?
Well, do you think, yeah, I mean, we're definitely going to see some face-offs, right? Those seem to be pretty popular in Canada.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that. I don't know when it'll happen. If they really go all out, I think probably by episodes 5 or 6, we'll see them. And they usually have done 2 in a season. So usually 1 really near the end, like at the final 4. So I think we'll get one soon.
Yeah, we might get one next week in China.
Yeah, I don't know. Next week, maybe that's what the diving task is.
Oh, dear.
Because you got the teams all you know, diving off high dives and stuff next week, which is going to be fun. And then some task where it looks like there's some very angry citizens that don't like what they're doing. Some sort of judging happening.
Oh, dear. An international incident.
On the Great Wall of China, apparently.
Yes. Well, the Great Wall of China has been a fixture in many different iterations of The Amazing Race. I think nowhere as interestingly as Amazing Race Australia Season 2, where a team went to the wrong entrance of the Great Wall of China that turned out to be an entirely different province. And you got this shot of Grant Bowler like rolling up to a random parking lot in the middle of nowhere and explaining, you guys are in Inner Mongolia now and you're eliminated because there's no way you're going to catch up.
Oh, man. You know, that's... You can't plan things like that. I mean, I've seen teams where they go to the wrong side of the park or the wrong entrance in the building, but the wrong side of one of the giant, largest monuments, a monument that can be seen from space, that takes talent.
Yeah, the wrong side of China.
Oh, that's great. I only hope for something on that level next week.
Me too. I that's always my hope. Someone goes to the wrong side of China. All right, Dan, I think that about wraps up everything that we're going to be talking about for episode 3. I want to give you a couple of administrative notes. We are here every week, usually sometime around the weekend, and we welcome all of your feedback. We love hearing from you. If you want to subscribe to us on iTunes, we are in both the Reality Rehab Ups feed. If you want to get a more holistic overview of all of the reality TV that's happening, you can subscribe there, or you can subscribe just to the Amazing Race feed, and we're found in there as well. We love it. If you rate and review either place, that helps us out, boosts our profile and all of that fun stuff. We get a lot of questions about how do I watch Amazing Race Canada if I'm not a Canadian? And the answer to that is you can either fly to Canada every Tuesday night, or you can become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. Get access to our exclusive patron-only Facebook group where there is a very active thread and people are tracking down links all the time where we can watch the show. And I want to give a very special shout out to everybody that's helping out with that this season, because I've been availing myself of it frequently and we really appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter or just tweet your rage at me. I am at Haymaker Hattie. And Dan, where are you on the Twitter?
I am at the Dan Heaton. And once again, just I love getting all the questions. I hope we try to answer as many as we can. A lot of the ones were repeats this week, but just keep them coming. It makes the show so much more fun to do.
Yes. And again, don't worry about whether or not Dan and I have seen the show, because we're going to see it eventually. Don't worry about spoiling us. Just as you're thinking of the questions, just go ahead and tweet them to us. Don't worry about making a note to do it later, because you're never going to remember to do that. And then you miss out on having your question read on the air.
Right. And this was so much fun. I can't wait to see what happens next week.
Yeah, I think we got an exciting time ahead of us. So I'm very much looking forward to that. And so I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.